Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to In The Pocket. My name's Johnny.
And my name's Chris.
Two totally average bass players, and we're here to talk all about that bass. As well as answering your questions at home, each week we take a look at the latest news, maybe break down some tones, or to give you the lowdown on the low end. Now, if you haven't heard of today's guest, then you've definitely been living under a rock. Chris, have you heard of a small band called The Beatles?
I am somewhat familiar with their back catalogue, yes.
Well, this week we are so honoured and thrilled to be joined by the one, the only, the all-father of bass. It's Sir Paul McCartney. Oh, I think he's having connection issues. Hang on.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, typical. Oh, he's just sent me a message.
Oh, go on.
He's just DM'd me.
All that work.
Yeah. Oh, he said Ringo's got a thing.
Ringo.
Got to go.
Oh, no.
Okay.
All these podcast episodes leading to this one specific point. Our dream guest, Paul McCartney, is now... Oh, God. What are we going to do?
Should we just get the tech support in? Get the backup?
Yeah, get the backup guest in.
Okay. All right. I guess we'll introduce it's CC. CC's here. Yay.
Hello.
The next best thing.
Here to disappoint
everyone.
I'd
like to clarify that hilarious bit. We are, of course, very excited and thrilled to have the one and only CC back on the podcast. We want to start things out just to clarify that, not to piss you off at the start of the podcast, CC. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
No, I'm great, thanks. Thank you for having me again. Been really looking forward to this.
Yeah, man. I mean, us too. Last time it was just the two of us, and now we've got this guy with us too.
We've got this loser.
So, you know.
This professional hanger-on.
Triple the fun, you know. It's going to be a good time. Where are you at the minute, and what's going on in your bass-playing life at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm in my bedroom, finally, after the house flood. And in terms of just general bass playing, it's actually really busy. So I'm recording next week with my band Red Giant. We're doing our new album, You Say, I Say. And then I'm also in the process of setting up my prog metal band, Von Strangelove.
What a name.
So we're hoping to actually get... I know, now... named after Dr. Strangelove.
I'm afraid that's my porn
yes,
star name, so I don't think you can have that name. So sorry about that. You will be hearing from my lawyer.
We could team up. I could do the music for you.
And
would
Johnny
you do
could
that
do
bit?
The visuals.
Yes, I'll do the video. Be great. I'll get Paul McCartney in as well. We're DMing now, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to see that. No.
Paul's balls, that's what we'll call it. Oh no, this is derailed too fast. He's never coming on now.
McCartney's sausage, lovely. Oh no, that's Linda. close enough.
Fantastic. I love it, it's perfect. Oh well, before we move on, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Jolly good.
I've recovered from my turkey gig, which we talked about on the last episode, but I hadn't done the gig by then. I've done the
gig
now.
Of course.
Yeah.
And it went swimmingly. I hear.
I did do some swimming. That was very nice. It was without a doubt the most tired I've ever been over the course of 3 days in my entire life, by far. I think we did. I'm going to say I had nine hours of sleep over 3 days.
That's what doctors recommend, actually.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, 9 hours per week is the recommended weekly allowance of sleep. But yes,
I feel like...
Go on.
Yeah, I feel like I should tell you, it took me about 10 seconds to realise that you meant Turkey the country and not some weird, like, turkey king, as in the animal.
It was the Bernard Matthews Q1 staff party.
Play to so many turkeys. My God.
That was not the gig. That was not the gig. It was this
Are you sure?
I hope so. It was a conference thing that a band had been booked to play at, but it was in a very fancy hotel in Turkey. It was very nice. Not a lot of sleep, unfortunately, but it was lovely. Personal highlight was getting off stage at 1 a.m., getting back to my room at 2 a.m., looking at my clock and going, I have to leave for the airport in 3 hours. What is the point of going? I had 2 hours sleep and then got up and went, well, that didn't work. I'm not going to the airport.
I'm somehow more tired now.
But the rest of the band, the other two guys in the band decided to just power through.
Wow.
Like, they just stayed in the bar with some of the other musicians. I was like, that is a bad move. That is a bad move. And we all suffered. But that was great. It was a really good gig. Flying with a bass is terrifying.
Mm. Well, like, I was going to say that because, Cece,
you flew
recently, didn't you? You were in Malta.
Yeah, weirdly, it was actually a year ago now. So it was in January last year.
Wow.
Never been to Malta, never flown on my own before.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And never flown with an instrument. So, that was really terrifying, but it was a massive learning curve for me, and it went really well, actually. Really enjoyed it, and it made me a lot more confident.
Yeah. Did you have the bass in the hold, or did you have it as carry-on?
I actually had it as carry-on, so what you can do, I didn't realise, but you can book an extra seat for an instrument.
Must be nice.
But it has to go in the window seat, and I was annoyed.
It's like an amazing view. Fuming.
You're on the aisle, and your stupid bass is as the window seat.
I like to think you're on the aisle, there's someone in the middle, and then the bass is on by the window, and you're like, don't you reach across there. Hands off.
Yeah, hands off my mono gig bag.
For some reason I pictured it out of the bag as well. Like, just placed as it was. Sorry, I just...
Seatbelt on and everything.
Oh, that is another thing, actually. You actually have to have the seatbelt on.
On the case. Well, yeah. I did not get an extra seat. Mine was in the hold, which is very, very, very stressful. But I did my research. I had a couple of towels packed in the base. I had the string slackened off, like I'd taped it up and all that sort of stuff. But there was an air tag in there as well. But yeah, it was all good, but it's quite nerve-wracking, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Scary.
I can imagine.
Scary stuff.
Yeah, but we got there, and it was terrifying as well. We landed back in Manchester. So just before I saw my case for my bass come out of the little, let's see what you've won, out of the like little curtain bit, a suitcase came out that looked like it had been annihilated with a sledgehammer. Like, it was genuinely just hanging on by the zip. Like, I do not know what someone had done to this suitcase, but I think it had been, like, overfilled as well. So it had been overfilled, then put on the plane.
Yeah.
The pressure had, like, damn. But we're talking, like, it was all cracked. I could see the clothes in it. And I was like, oh, no.
You're just going to see a machine head comes out.
Just a single A string just on the...
Oh, no.
And a bridge pickup. Like, oh, God. The worst pickup is the only bit that survived. But no, it came around the corner and everything was fine. And then I was like, oh, thank God. Because I was so sleep deprived.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah, but yeah, we got there in the end. But yeah, it was good fun. I enjoyed it. Anyway, now I've spoken about that, we can yeah,
speaking of things that are good fun, shall we move on to some questions?
Yes, let's do that.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Oh, before we crack on, actually, I will do a little bit of admin. If you want to ask questions on this very podcast, all you have to do, it's very simple, head over to Instagram and follow us at In The Pocket Pod. You'll see our posts going up, either showing what guests we have on, like we did for this fantastic episode, and you can comment on there the questions you want to ask them, etc. So make sure you go and follow us on there. If you're not watching on YouTube, go and subscribe to us on YouTube. YouPoob, I called it then.
YouPoob.
YouPoob.
That is a very different website.
Yeah. Follow us on PooTube. That's fantastic. No. Where was I? Oh, yes. Questions. Do all those things. Follow us everywhere. Ask your questions. Chris, go.
Go. Mop this up quick.
Take it away from me, please.
Please, God. So, obviously, CC, this question is for you. I mean, Johnny, you can answer if you really want to, but that kind of defeats the objective of having a guest.
Sure.
Can pedals marketed for guitar work on bass?
It's an interesting one, this.
Yes.
Oh, okay, moving on.
There you go.
Yes.
That's it.
No, I refuse to elaborate. Thank you.
That's it. That's the
okay,
answer.
Okay, good. Thanks so much for listening,
everyone. Yeah, it's a myth.
And we'll see you in the next one. Please continue.
Bye. No. It's a myth that really annoys me. But I can understand why people think so, in particular with like sort of modulation effects because of the tracking.
Yeah.
But that is just not true. And I can say that now as someone who's tried loads and loads and loads of pedals and has a pedal board made up, I'd say 99%. Of pedals that are made
for guitar.
It's
like a spaceship, that
including
thing.
A Mal 9.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, it's
you
actually
have,
called the mothership.
You have got a spaceship pedal board, to be fair. As someone who's had a few big pedal boards in my day, you have got an absolute whopper of a board.
I called my rack rig the mothership, and then I saw yours, and so it was called the mothership, and I was like, oh, mine's like the daughtership, really.
I tend to just swear at my pedal board, but fair enough. Again, really?
Brilliant.
But yes, continue.
Yes, please continue.
Yeah. I totally understand why people think that. And I think another thing that tends to feed that narrative is this idea people have in their heads of, oh, bass isn't made to do that, so you can't use that pedal with bass. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't work. It's just more to do with the attitude behind it. But for me, obviously, I'm digressing slightly, but I feel like it's an important part of the answer. So obviously the music I make on bass when it's me doing solo stuff is very for the sake of making music. So obviously bass playing in general, if I'm playing on a song, I'll always serve the song and I'll do like a proper bass line, as people would call it. But when I'm doing the solo jams, the whole purpose of that is just to create a piece of music. It doesn't matter what instrument it's on. I choose the bass because, one, I'm most comfortable with it, and two, the frequency of it and the way it expresses itself really resonates with me. So I feel like I can actually get across a message in the way that I want to get it across. But most of that utilizes guitar pedals and stuff that isn't, you'd say, like traditional bass. And I get a lot of comments like, oh, why are you playing like that? Play it like a bass. But for me, that's not the point of why the song's being created. And I feel like it would be really cool one day if people got more into the mindset of actually creating music for the sake of creating music. So utilizing all the textures from guitar pedals with a bass creates this whole other world, and I just feel like it opens up what the instrument can do. So yeah, absolutely, guitar pedals do work with bass.
Yeah, because if you were just limited to, right, you're only allowed to use bass pedals, CC, like, you're gonna not have that many really to do the things that you want to do as well. Because I thought this question was interesting for you, because like you said, you're coming at it from a perspective of not traditional bass playing in some contexts when you're, you know, creating these really atmospheric and melodic lines that's filling the whole spectrum, you know, rather than just being, I am the bass. This is the bit I'm doing. You don't have to necessarily put yourself into one corner and be like, yes, I need to do this, and the bass needs to be the bass, and that's it, you know?
Not allowed to play anything above the fifth fret, because those are the money notes.
No. I think what's interesting here is it's all about context, really, whether you can... And remember, in anything we do and say, there's no rules. You know, it doesn't matter. And some companies even make their pedals and don't like specifically say, oh, this is for guitar, this is for bass or whatever. They're like, yes, you just use it however you want. And, you know, use it on a synth, on a keyboard or whatever. You know, some people do that. Where was I going with that? Yes. For me, and I think where some people might be like, yeah, no, it doesn't work on bass, is where it's all about the low end and what gets retained or what doesn't, more importantly, I suppose. So some guitar pedals might suck out some of that low end. Now, that's only a problem if you're turning it on and off all the time. So like a drive pedal, for instance, if I've got my standard bass tone and I turn that guitar pedal on, like a Boss DS1, I don't know, you know, like it might sound great by itself, but then when you kick it on and off, you're kind of losing the low end. So you're actually dropping out a little bit of the mix or having less impact. Whereas if you use it as an always on, but your core bass tone without it is super bass heavy, you know, you're turning the bass up on the amp way more than you would without that pedal, you can kind of compensate for that. So I think for some people, you shouldn't necessarily just say, no, this pedal's for guitar, etc., because it might be really good on bass if you adjust your other settings or your bass or what you're doing based on that context. And it's not as an on and off, you know. So it depends on the context, basically, what you're doing. But I agree with what you said.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. With always on pedals, for me, I use a Golden Plexi, and that's basically made up my whole bass tone, pretty much everything I do for the last couple of years now. And it's a really meaty bass tone, but if I turn that pedal off, my tone is actually quite a warm tone. And so it's that, like you say, that's filling out and giving it that aggressive sound when I play, because the pedal's always on, so I can afford to have the bass slightly warmer underneath all of that. And then because that's a pedal that when you play lighter or harder, it depends on how distorted it is, you really don't have to turn it off no matter what you're playing. So it's, that's a really good point.
Yeah. Have you ever found a pedal that didn't work for you on bass? You know, the one that you're like, oh, not sure about this.
I would say, well, I've not found one that doesn't work at all. But I found pedals that I just don't like the sound of them on bass, but they still work by definition. The only things I have found is with certain pedals, like if you've got, say, the Golden... what's it called? The Mel 9. So we did all the, like, string sections, etc. Those don't work so well on the low end because it has some trouble tracking. But again, as soon as you get above the fifth fret, it has no issue anyway. And because it works in the same octave at that point as it would if you were playing the low note, it kind of compensates. And it's playing the same note no matter what octave you're on in that case. It doesn't really make a difference anyway. So I wouldn't say that it's a pedal where if you left it on and you were playing like really low notes all the time and actually playing a bass line, no, it wouldn't particularly work, not in the same way as you could maybe strum a chord with it on guitar, but it does still work really nicely on bass depending on what you do with it. So it's again, it's about context and it's about what it is that you want from the pedal. But saying that, with the String 9 that they've just done, which is a more of like a synthy one, it's actually, they've improved the tracking anyway, so again, it just depends on the pedal. So
winner. And I was just thinking, because obviously, you know, what comes into this conversation as well is the difference of pedals and multi-effects and things like that. You've got such a big board. I bet you get this question all the time, and I'm posing it from them. I think I know what you're going to say. I don't want to be the person to ask this question. But here we go. Why not just get a multi-effects?
Yeah, so I actually, for the longest time, have had a multi-effects on the board with the rest of the pedals. In the last couple of weeks, I've actually had to take that off because it's been having some problems. But it may or may not go back on, or I might just see how I get on with single pedals. But reason I had that on the board actually was because, for a start, it was doing a lot of the groundwork without taking up extra space on the board. So I had a compressor that was always on, and it was a really strong, good quality studio compressor. Not actually compressing anything, but just shaping the tone a little bit. And then also always on was a really subtle bit of reverb all the time. So I was able to have that on underneath and not kind of have it in the way. And then on top of that, I could have six other effects. Those specific effects were just kind of like little nice touches here and there. There was a couple that I used religiously for certain songs, but I've actually found other ways around that now anyway, because I've had to. But reason I didn't use it just that is because of the amount of pedals I have. So when my board first started, it was just the multi-effects unit and a wah. But as I found that I needed to do more and more, especially with the solo bass stuff, I just didn't have enough room on it. So for me, it was nice in that regard to be able to add separate pedals. And the other reason is that when I'm doing that solo bass stuff, I like to kind of mess around and tweak all the settings while I'm actually playing. Yeah. And for me, having a physical pedal you can look at and go, right, I know where that is, I know what to turn, and I haven't got to like go into some settings while I'm playing. I can just do it. It's nice to have that physical aspect. So yeah, a mix of reasons really. Yeah, but
and I suppose if one thing goes down on the board, it's kind of easier than if the multi effects goes down, then you're like, oh, well, that's everything gone, kind of thing.
Yeah, that was one thing as well, is the multi effects actually, it was a Line 6 HX and it's true bypass, so if that went down, everything else still worked, whereas if it was just that, basically all my tone is completely gone.
It's a tough old world, and we sound like right nerds talking about this stuff. I always say to people, like, being a musician is not cool. Like, it's the nerdiest thing you could do. We're like, oh, I love the compressor. This is set to this, and my preset does this. But there we go. Chris, any thoughts from yourself on guitar pedals in general, using for bass? And what's your experience?
Yeah, I think the only problem I've ever had with a guitar pedal on bass is mainly like the low end thing, because but it would have to be a pedal that wasn't an always on pedal. Let's say it's like a drive, or a drive that I want to be a drive. I don't want it to be like an always on thing that's like a main staple of the tone. I want it to be, when I press this on, I want drive, and I don't always want that on. I've had that with a few things. I've had that with a few fuzz pedals where I've been like, I really don't like this on bass. And it's been something that's designed to be for bass and guitar. And for me, it's just like, it's really just not up to it on the bass guitar. But you raise a very good point about the messing with multi-effects on the fly compared to having the physical pedals in front of you. Let's say you're messing with like delay times or feedback on a reverb pedal, or you know, those kind of things. You don't get that spontaneity, or you don't get that kind of like manual control with a multi-effects unit, because you are still opening like a menu and you're having to use the screen to kind of mess with stuff, and you still can do it, but I think it kind of robs you of like the I almost call it like the romance of the situation. Like, You know, if I've got a, I don't know, a reverb pedal in front of me, and I'm like, nah, I want to go really ambient, and leaning down and turning the reverb up on a physical pedal just seems to be more enjoyable than going, I'm going to turn the reverb up. Okay, so there's the reverb, then there's the settings, and then, oh, I need to save my preset first, so I'll just click that. And then now I'll turn the thing up and then close
there's
it.
There's also like, there's also no, like, it takes away the ability to be a bit more creative. And on CC, I imagine live, if you're just like, oh, I'll create a wild noise at the end of a song, you can't really do that with a multi. Whereas you could like, you could be like,
and they don't
controller of the Death Star, like, twisting everything, you know?
And they don't play as well together as analog pedals do with each other. Like, you know, running like a digital fuzz inside of an FX unit into a digital reverb. They both are correct digital representations of what they both do. But like sometimes when you run fuzz into things or you run things into fuzz, it can glitch because you end up hitting issues with the impedance and that creates a different sound. You don't get that with a digital unit because it's not meant to do that. Like, you know, the whole thing of like, fuzz before wah or wah after fuzz. Like, wait, that's the same thing, just the other way around. But you know what I mean? Like running a wah into a fuzz or vice versa, you get the fuzz is supposed to react differently because of the impedance of the signal is not the correct, almost like input gain going into the pedal. Digitally, you'd not hear a difference because the digital emulation of that fuzz is designed to do something. Like, but if you're going for that, like that's a big difference as well. Like you're going for that kind of approach, CC, whereas I don't do that. Like my stuff is all like, okay, this is the blah 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 preset. That's all locked in, done, so I can replicate that exact sound for the next like 30 gigs. That's all done and dusted. Like that's what I like. I crave like order and
love.
everything is correct and all locked in and stuff like that. The disadvantage is it robs me of like the spontaneity because otherwise I'm going to have to, like, my quad cortex is in a case as well. Like it's in like a little Perspex case. So I've got to lift the lid up, then touch the buttons, then turn the dials. So it's like, it's not very,
it's like the lock and key. Just keep him away. Don't touch anything.
Yeah. It's like, it's not really an exciting thing to mess around with. It sounds great, but it's not the same as like, like if I had every pedal that's inside my quad cortex, if I had that in front of me as a physical thing, it would be much more, be a much more enjoyable experience.
Interesting.
Yeah, I totally get that. It's funny you say about liking everything set because in my head, it doesn't look it on the board, but my pedal board actually has sections. So certain pedals, I've got tape on a couple of them even, but they stay where they are. Like, for example, the Golden Plexi, because that is what I use as an always-on thing, I've got tape on it, and I'm like, right, that doesn't move because it's perfect, and I don't want to have to find that again. And the same with a couple of other pedals, but then the other ones where it's kind of like reverbs and stuff like that, they're open season and I like to just mess around with them, so I can totally understand
of you being able to put tape on your pedals, because that is a pro move. You know, you see all the rig rundowns and they're like, it's all taped over and they've got dust on them when they haven't been touched.
That's the hardcore stuff.
Yeah, and I long for the day that I can put some tape on me, like, that's my settings done, because I'm such a tweaker.
You can just do that, you know. It's like you're the one in your own way there.
Oh, I know. But I'm such a tweaker that I'll be like, oh, my strings are a bit more dead, so I'll dial in a bit more presence on here. You know, like, I'm not that guy. So
I might put some tape on the quad cortex screen as like a deterrent to mess with it. You know, like, oh, it's all locked in and taped, when in reality I've just clicked the save preset button.
Yeah, do not touch.
I used to do that so much. Like the amount of times I'd be sat sound checking, going, well, I used the Vintage Microtubes emulation at my last gig. Why don't I try the B7K emulation? See if that's a different style of drive. And it's like, you're playing a wedding, you psychopath. Stop it.
Just take a DI.
But and exactly. But the tone from Mr. Brightside must be perfect.
Before we move on, absolutely. That's the thing that everyone is singing along to.
Absolutely. Yeah. B minor, B minor, B minor, A. That's the one. That's the one.
Brandon Flowers is a genius lyricist. My God.
Absolutely. That's how I, when I see people singing along, I always think, oh, yeah, they're singing my bass line. No, they're not. Yes, they are.
We're just like fish in the audience. have you got, before we move on, have you guys seen the film, the animated film Atlantis?
Yes.
You know,
that's, that's in my, like, that and Treasure Planet and even live action remake.
I mean, I watched them back to back the other day and it was amazing.
As you should. My girlfriend hadn't seen that. And then this is a god tier movie. You ready for this? You watch Disney's Treasure Planet.
Uh-huh.
And then you roll straight into Muppet's Treasure Island.
Yeah, yeah, pretty good, pretty good. The same,
the
but
same
different
film.
I feel like I'm in American Psycho.
That's what you get on this
like
podcast.
Trading business.
That's what you get. Let's see. Let's see Jonathan Dibble's compressor settings. Oh God, it's even got a blend control.
Filthy, filthy. Don't want to see that.
Go on, Atlantis. 10
Atlantis.
Out of 10,
yeah, there's absolutely.
You do look like Milo, to be fair.
Milo Thatch. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll you're welcome.
Yeah, you do. Oh,
amazing. Well, I wish
he's over the moon now.
Yeah. See you later. Thanks so much for watching, everyone. Goodbye. what was I saying? Oh yes, you know the bit where he's down in the boiler room and they're like, "Can you fix the boiler?" And he's like, "He twists it and then like hits it with a hammer and it works perfectly." I imagine that is what CC does to a pedal board, like every night to make it work. And then it goes. And she's like, uh-huh, yep, it's perfect. I know, yep, cool. End of gig.
Nailed it.
That's exactly
amazing.
It.
Amazing. Thank you for indulging me for that analogy.
Not when something breaks, though.
No.
Yeah. That's the worst as well, because I imagine, have you got a switcher, or does every pedal run into each other?
Yeah, yeah, it's just old school. Everything's into each other. And,
you are.
I've tried to keep the.
Right. Oh.
I know. I've tried to keep all the power cables really neat and labeled, so I know what everything is. But about a year ago, I actually had to do a video titled "What's Wrong with My Pedal Board."
I remember watching that
because and it turns out it actually was the new tremolo pedal that I'd put on it. But for some reason, the fault didn't happen any time I isolated the pedal. And then every time I plugged it back in, after a while, it would start to happen again. So it was really tough to find because I was like, well, is it my pedal board? Because it can't be the new pedal because it's not making the problem. But
that's when you go through and you start treating your pedals like your children and you're like, I really hope it's not this one, my favourite one.
Yeah, please.
Oh, no. I hope it's that one.
Well, I actually did.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, so it was sadly the tremolo. But then they stopped making it when they just released it. So I was like,
is that not because it was probably broken?
My God, that video ruined them. You took them down in one fell swoop.
Oh, one video. Recover from this.
My God. Who's next on your hit list? This podcast.
This podcast.
Well, it was actually Gibson that released the pedal, so I've taken Gibson down. I can go for anyone.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
Oh, my God.
Let's go.
Bring it on.
I don't think I'd be that upset if Gibson died, to be honest.
Well,
they won't give us a grabber. So it's like, no, whatever. You're dead to me.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Give me a G3 and then die, you know.
That's what I meant. A G3. Close enough.
Oh dear. Shall we move on to our next questionos?
We should, but I'm going to flip the order around because we were just talking about Gibson. So you don't, Cece, you don't own any Gibson basses by any chance, do you?
No, I don't actually. I own a Gibson style bass, but never a Gibson.
Close enough,
ever.
But not actually relevant to the question because also you you don't own any Fender basses either, which is to some sacrilege, I imagine. So the question is,
I know.
The question is, what's wrong with you? The question is, why doesn't CC on any Fender basis? How dare you be an individual?
You met me sick.
Well, I own two Fender guitars.
Ah, close enough.
But they're guitars, so it doesn't count.
Just
doesn't
to me.
Count. But, yeah, so it wasn't on purpose, really. But for me, this is going to sound slightly convoluted, but a lot of the kind of basses that you see Fender coming out with, they're all mainly jazz basses or P basses, obviously. I love P basses, and I want to love jazz basses, but because I've got a curve in my spine, it sends me the wrong way, and because jazz basses are offset, it makes them sit really weird, so they're just not a particularly comfortable bass for me.
Interesting.
And then with P basses, the reason I don't own a Fender one is because I just haven't yet played one that I've fallen in love with. I've played plenty of P basses from other brands, like the Schecter Exotic, for example, is a good one because that one's a lot more streamlined than the average Fender P bass. And for me, obviously being quite petite, that's actually really nice. So there's just not been a reason for me to go, well, it's got Fender on the headstock, so I guess I'll go for that, even though this one suits me better. So yeah, it's not that I have anything against them. It's just that I haven't found the right one that's made me want to buy it. So
yeah, because I mean, you're number one at the minute. Would you say it's the Warwick right now?
Yeah, definitely. So I've got three or four kind of top basses, but they've all got things in common. So number one, obviously, the Warwick. And then in no particular order, there's the Schecter Exotic I just mentioned, the Soundgear SR700, and the Anaconda CXE4.
That's also Johnny's name.
Everything they have in common is that...
Please continue.
What was I
saying?
You're
talking about anacondas, the basses, not the...
Yes, not Johnny. But yeah, so they've all got one thing in common, which is that they're all really streamlined, like Johnny.
Johnny is very streamlined, to be fair. Aerodynamic man.
Easy to store.
Easy to store.
Again, I don't know if... Johnny's like, got this really unimpressed
face. I don't think he can hear us. I think he's like lost his. I think we've lost him. We have. Oh god! I think
the universe has got my back.
Exactly. We got some dead air. I think he's gone. You know. I think he might be gone. Oh no! I think there might be a dodgy cable. He can't hear us.
Well, I'd like to have said I was listening for the last, 10 minutes of that, but I wasn't because I couldn't hear anything because my audio went. So, sorry, we're just going to abruptly edit in and jump off from here. Sorry about that, everyone. Please continue with what we were saying. I think you were saying something about one of your basses being quite streamlined, CC?
Yeah, so I was saying about all my top basses, so the top four. They've all got things in common, like they're all quite streamlined. Most of them, except for one, obviously the P bass, have 24 frets. And for me, with the stuff I do, that can be pretty important a lot of the time. And they've also got quite streamlined necks as well. So, like, I can get around on bigger basses. It doesn't really bother me. But if I've got the choice, I generally go for something more streamlined because I'm just quite dainty. Not that that's good hand for scale there, but I'm not the biggest
person. So am I.
Can you tell?
yeah, by the size of everyone's hands.
Yes.
Wow.
But no, being 4'11", very petite, it's nice for me to not feel like I'm mugging around a huge bass. And although Fender basses aren't huge, they're still bulkier than I would generally go for. That's not to say that I would never have one. Like, I've got some pretty big bases. The Paul Gray ATK is a really good example of that. It's got quite a chunky neck, huge body, it's really heavy. Whoa. I can get around on it just fine, and it sounds amazing, but would I want to play it day in, day out? Not particularly, if I want my joints to last forever. So, yeah. But nothing against Fender, just personal preference, really.
Sure. Well, I've not met someone that's, you know, a lot of people are always like, it's Fender or nothing. Or they're just so anti-Fender, like, you're paying for the name, you know. But I've not met someone who's come at it from an actual practical standpoint of like, you know, it just doesn't suit me physically, you know, and they're just not ergonomic enough for me.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a bass where, you know, you were close to getting it, but that just that side of it kind of let you down?
I mean, yeah, I've played basses where, yeah.
But you can go first. You've probably
got more of a story on it than I have, to be honest.
Me and Johnny went to Bass Bros a couple of months ago. Specifically, I was going to buy a bass, and well, I did. But a couple of the basses we were trying, the main one that jumped out at me was, jumped at me for this reason, was with the Flea bass. We tried like the sort of Fender Flea signature model, and just hated the neck, like. Just like, it's not that it wasn't too big or anything like that. It was just like really sticky and really like, just like not, it didn't feel like a fluid thing to play, if that makes sense. Like, it almost felt like it felt like it was like fighting my movement of sliding up neck at every turn. And I've had that. And then the other up one, which funnily enough, I actually still own the bass, but that might change, is I have a Fender Aerodyne, and the body cutaway, which were your forearm of your picking hand would sort of rest if you're playing sat down, is actually quite sharp. Like, it's quite it's got quite it doesn't like roll, it's quite an abrasive kind of like right angle. And over time, playing it sat down or playing it where it's, if you have it high up on a strap or in a position where you're almost like chicken winging a little bit with your picking hand, it really starts to dig into your forearm. So it's kind of a bass that only really works if you play it like down by your knee, which does look really cool, to be fair. But
flying V style.
I can relate to that, actually. So I hate
because you have your basses quite low as well, don't you?
Yeah, I hate lacquer on the back of necks. I completely get what you mean, where it feels like they're fighting your movement. I can't stand it. And the other thing is, I hate neck dive, which quite a lot of Fender basses I've played have had that. It just aggravates me. And the other thing is, again, this is a very me-specific problem, but a lot of basses, you know, the cutaway, like the belly cut, so when you sat down, it should rest kind of in your ribcage. For me, because I'm small, when I'm sat down playing, that bit of a bass sits kind of here, so like right above my neck, like, almost like on my collarbone.
Sternum kind of way. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So like almost into my collarbone. And because it's on certain bases, they've done it really sharply, so it's not rolled on the edges, it's actually digging into me and it bruises my collarbone, ooh, which if it's the rest of the bass makes up for it, I'm happy to put up with. But if it's kind of the whole thing just feels like a battle, that I can't stand it. So,
well, Cece, I think I've got the perfect bass for you then. I think you need to get yourself you need a Steinberger. You know, the ones that are like just a rectangle. And then no head as well, so no neck dive. Perfect. Funnily nice and light.
The very, very first bass I ever laid hands on in a shop was one of those, a red one.
Was it really?
It was a weird introduction. Yeah.
That's really cool.
I was just getting pictures of it, and weirdly, the one I clicked was a red one, so that's funny.
Ooh, ah, that's funny.
Well done. What you said, Chris, like, I'm cutaways is the biggest ick for me on a bass sometimes. Like, let me get this one out. The orange O bass, you know, it's kind of so awful it's cool in a way, but it's got this sharp...
Me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got this, it's got no belly cuts, no nothing. It's just a slab. Oh, and I hate that.
Yeah.
My style of playing, my arm is going hell for leather, you know? And so having that in the way, I hate it. And that's the only reason I sold my Sterling. I had a Ray 34, Ray 24 Stingray, which is like their vintage inspired one with a two band preamp, slimmer neck.
Oh, well, that won't have a cutaway, will it? Because it's kind of like the vintage style.
Exactly. And that's the only thing I didn't like about it, and it pissed me off. And I was like, ah, this is so annoying when playing longer sets. So I sold it in the end. But if that had a cutaway, which, you know, maybe I could have added one, but over years of playing.
That's a lot of work. Over years of playing, just punching it repeatedly,
grinding it away.
That's the thing that a lot of people overlook. Like, you know, it's like when I'm gigging, I'm on stage for a long time. Like, you know, weddings, corporate events, you know, 90 minutes on stage is a short gig for me, you know, like a kind of, 90 minutes. So, but those are factors people who don't do that don't think about. Like, you know, having, a more vintage style Ray 34 that has no cutaway, you might play that and go, that's fine. And it will be fine for you. But for me, it's like over the course of like 2 hours of playing it, that would drive me nuts. Like, I don't think I could do a conventional wedding with my Aerodyne. I genuinely think it would like really bruise up my forearm or even like I could see it like after, you know, hours and hours of playing, it could start to like cut you up a little bit because it's just very uncomfortable. But to someone who just plays as like a hobby or they just like playing at home for a bit, which is obviously perfectly fine, but that isn't a concern. Whereas for me, that would drive me nuts.
It's all part of the journey of finding what bass works for you though, isn't it? Because I had that with that Stingray, I didn't realize it had an issue with the bridge at the time where it wasn't even an issue. It was just for me, it became an issue because the screws on the bridge, so on the saddles, so like these bits here, were poking out quite a lot. And because of the bridges are slightly bigger on the Sterlings, on the more affordable ones, and I didn't realize when I was playing, my hand was hitting them. And I was like 2 songs in and I was like, this feels a bit wet down here. What's going on? I mean, take that out of context how you like. But I look down and there's just blood everywhere. Awful. And I was like, oh, okay, this bass isn't quite working for me then. Like, for my style, perhaps.
I've had that on guitar.
I need to make some changes.
Really? Yeah, I used to do that on guitar a lot. The little screws on my P bass, I need to do something to them because they're sticking out quite a lot. It doesn't bother me when I'm playing it with my fingers because it's like, you know, I'm up by the pickup, so it's not an issue. But if I have to do a gig on it where I'm playing with a pick, I'm going to start having the same issue you did. So I need to figure out how to solve that.
Well, before we move on, I do have some tips for that. So there are several things you can do. Either
buy a new bass.
Yeah, that's what I would do. you can shim the neck.
Only just this week discovered what that was. So
it was only like late last year for me, and Matt told me what it was. It's basically just it's like basically raising the neck slightly from in within the pocket, so that then
yeah.
the bridge you have. He said the thing.
I've seen some. I've seen some special shims in necks over the years.
Wow, some homemade
credit card
jobs.
Is one of the yeah. One of them was a piece of cardboard.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
But, can you imagine your dad's like, has anyone seen my debit card?
Yeah, just shove the whole thing in.
Yeah.
Yeah, first thing, Dad, you have to promise not to be mad at me.
Yeah. But can your base do contactless?
We've got a £1,500 credit limit on this jazz base.
Incredible. Incredible.
Nice. Anyway, yeah, shimming, it's a new one for me. I have a bass that may be getting shimmed tomorrow. We shall see.
Wow.
I'm not doing it, don't
always
worry.
Getting shimmed. Having a shim yeah. job, I think.
Shimmying on.
Shimming, yeah. Yes. So you can do that. You can either buy, or you can buy like small, shorter screws,
mm-hmm.
the little bits for the bridge.
That's probably what I'll do.
Or probably the laziest thing that I did. It's just install a bridge cover. I had the exact thing on my P bass, and
I could do that with my P bass because it's like my flat bass,
vintage.
So it's like very vintage indeed.
Speaking of like hard edges on your forearm when you're playing as well,
yeah.
I've noticed certain people do it. Like when I've got a Telecaster, and my arm was always bruised.
Yeah,
but I've noticed a lot of people nowadays, they've probably been doing it for years, but I've just not noticed it. But they've actually put tape and bits of foam on where their arm rests, and it seems to solve the issue.
Yeah.
So if that's something that you don't particularly care about, then...
Yeah. That's like probably
it's
what
an option
do,
if you love an instrument.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't love this one. No.
Absolutely
we
not.
We don't get along.
He's not treating it well.
No, I've tried to sell it about 3 times and people have said no.
Oh, bless it.
And no.
Shall we move on to our third and final question?
Let's do just that. And interestingly, we're going to move away from gear now and talk about more of a compositional approach. So, Cece, what is your approach to writing bass lines?
Yeah, so again, a very contextual thing, so depends on what the job is. So with my solo bass stuff in the jams, obviously that's all improvised. So what I'll do is I'll kind of not have any preconceived idea about what I'm doing, and I just like to see what comes out and kind of what I feel like I'm being given at that moment, and then it just comes out like that. So nothing particularly goes on with that. Recording bass lines or writing bass lines for other people's music, I always try and think of what will serve the song. So I'll basically just have a play around with it, come up with a few things, maybe go a bit over the top, but just to see if any cool ideas come out that I can harvest. But generally, I don't have a set thing where I'm like, right, time to write a bass line. So step one, I'm doing this, then I'll do that. It's kind of dependent completely on the situation, and every time it's different. But again, I kind of just see what comes out, but with the idea of I don't want to do anything that's going to ruin the song or take away from anything else. I just try to complement the song. So not only kind of serve it and do the bare minimum, I do want to actually, like, for me, I try to bring out certain bits of the song and hopefully lift them up and complement them. Sometimes that can be in a bit of an unusual way, but I just think that's sometimes nice to have in a song. It just perks your ears up a bit. So yeah, not a specific set way of writing bass lines other than I'll sit down, listen to it, or jam through it if I'm in the room with someone, and then just see what comes out, but not overdo it.
Mm. Cece, I'm sorry, I've completely forgotten the name of it. But I think when
bass.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. Sorry, I forgot my entire personality. because you can see sounds, right?
Oh, synesthesia. Yeah,
that's the one.
Yeah.
So does that have an impact then on your bass writing? You know, when you're, or is it more helping with the textures of the sounds?
Both, really. So obviously for me, it's not, I like when people ask that because it makes me realize what I'm doing, because I don't really think about it because I don't know any different. But when I look back on it, I'm like, actually, yeah, I know what's going on there. So this comes into learning stuff as well. But for example, the obvious thing is with the improvised stuff, I'll be like trying to make certain textures and I like the way they look and I'll know what I want from that. But when it comes to actually writing a bass line, the way it wants to slot in with the song, I'll know if something's wrong, if it starts looking wrong. Like if things are getting in the way visually as well, I'll know that something's not right. So yeah, that's a really interesting thing to think about. And I'm sure when I play, I'm probably doing way more and I'll come off this podcast and go, oh my God, I'm doing that as well. And I didn't even think about it. But
it's not a case of you thinking about it, because it's like, that's the default setting for you.
Yeah.
We don't, me and Johnny literally don't think that way.
I can smell sounds, but that's about it. You know,
sounds.
Yeah. So like,
that's cool though.
You're not being serious, are you? No.
Do you know some people actually can though?
Can they? I mean,
that's why I didn't.
Some sounds that come from me, I can smell, but not. No, I had to bring it right back down. Sorry.
I knew you were gearing up for a fart joke then as well. I know you so well by this point.
Yeah, it's a miracle we got this far through without it, to be honest. It's like it must add like another layer of creative potential, or like another thing to add to it, you know, being able
I've got certain, like when I listen to songs and I know, like if it's a song I like or a band I admire, because I can also see what they're doing, I feel like it gives me a better insight into why what they're doing works, rather than kind of just listening and going, that's really cool, that's really clever. I feel like I'm able to kind of go, it is really cool and clever, but why does it work? And what is making sure that nothing's getting in the way of each other? Like Tool are a great example for that. And because I can kind of see the not only the space between all the instruments, but also the different textures that they're making, and how those different textures interact with each other, I feel like I know why they're complementing each other. And I can kind of draw off that with my own experience then, and in my own writing, where I'm like, well, I know this isn't going to get in the way and this is going to complement that, because I can see and hear that that's going to happen. And I can also obviously feel it. But the same thing goes with learning songs as well. So, not that I make it my life's mission to learn songs absolutely verbatim and get them spot on, but I do think it's good practice to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a really important part of anyone's journey is to do that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with mimicking stuff, but for me, I've found that when I'm either picking stuff out by ear, which is my most comfortable way of learning, I just find it way quicker for me personally, because I can see what's going on. I can kind of, if I'm listening to the bass line or whatever instrument I'm learning, I can visually separate it from everything else, and I feel like the two go hand in hand, obviously, because I've got to be able to hear it, to see it, to separate it. But because I can see it, it makes me hear it more clearly, and then I can see it more clearly, and then I can separate it, and then I can hear it better and kind of know which bit I'm focusing on and how to pick out the notes, even if it's not an isolated bass line. So there's that aspect, but also with the actual delivery of it, if I want to mimic the sound of someone's playing, because I can see the texture of how they're playing it, I don't know how I necessarily know what to do, but it just kind of, I just kind of do where I can hear it and I'm like, okay, I know what I need to do to make it look like that. And I know whether I'm playing it in the right way because it'll look right. Whereas if I'm playing it slightly wrong, even a little bit, like not just the notes, but the actual texture of how I'm playing it, that's going to look wrong. So for me, I'm able to kind of tweak it until I'm like, yeah, that's looking right. That kind of slots in. So
yeah,
it's a very multifaceted thing, but it's helpful.
It's fascinating. It's like you've got a superpower or something, you know?
Like, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's amazing. Really cool. and, you know, when it comes to writing bass lines, I suppose with a lot of your stuff, you know, you're doing a lot of solo bits, so you can kind of start with the bass almost, whereas I imagine the majority of people writing bass lines are probably writing it to a rest of a song or, you know, have come up with something else first and then do the bass, unless the bass is the central point. I know for me, for videos, because I'm demoing gear, like that's like, what, like, I'd say 80% of the playing I do now is like for videos and writing for videos.
Yeah.
It is just the bass, you know, and so I'm probably being a lot more melodic in some bits and like the intros of videos and stuff than I naturally would otherwise. And that's all just from like, right, pick up the bass. What does this bass actually inspire me to do? And I think that can, you know, that's a thing in reviewing video. Reviewing gear, I suppose,
definitely
comes across in it. So I lean on that for that side of it. But when I'm writing bass lines for like a song, like somebody's sent to me, like, oh, add a bass line to this. Yeah, like you said, it's serving the song first, and then seeing where we can add some spice, where it makes sense and is relevant.
Boom.
But do you ever, or for either of you, have you ever like written a song and not written the bass first?
All the time.
Yeah,
I've done it a couple of times. Obviously, mainly I pick up a bass most of the time, so I'm always generally writing on bass, but if I'm not, I still come up with stuff. But yeah.
Interesting. Do you know what? I gravitate, and there's, you know, different things you can do to write songs, obviously, but I gravitate quite closely to the drums. Like, I love playing MIDI drums and just like on my keyboard, like, ooh, because I can't play real drums. So that's the closest I'll ever get. So I really enjoy making beats on a kit. And then I used to write whole EPs worth of stuff just by starting on the kit. All right, now I'll just see what bass comes that. And then I'm like, oh, now the song's forming. I'll go from there. So there's, you know, that's kind of the total backwards way, because most people will be like, yeah, guitar or vocals start there and that'll drive it. Whereas I start driving it from the backbone of the...
The foundations upwards.
Yeah, which is, you know, I guess makes sense, but not traditionally in a lot of singer-songwriters what they do. Other tactics I've used will be, I've literally just put on a drone note before, like, and then I see like, right, that's my key. Okay. Where can we go along here? And when you just do that, you're immediately just adding to something that's there rather than just starting with nothing. There's so many different ways in which you can start your brain going when you've got an instrument in your hand, and which way can I attack this from? How can I get started? Because that's often the biggest barrier I find to writing, is like just getting going. And like, does that come from just jamming? Does it come from, oh, I've had this idea in my head? You know, for different people, it will be all different, I imagine. But yeah, there's all different ways of which you can attack songwriting.
Definitely.
Before we finish off, Cece, with writing music and doing all this, how do you attack writer's block? Things like that. How do you get over that?
Ooh. Yeah. So I actually made a video on this, but it was towards when I first started my channel, so it's not the best put together. But yeah, basically what I'll do is, well, there's a few different things, and everyone might not necessarily agree with them, but depending on the context, if I've got to write something for some reason, then I will literally take inspiration from things, and I'll try and get inspiration for certain things to kind of start the process running, because what my brain does is translate everything else I like into music. So for example, if I'm really into a video game at that point in time, or a certain film, or literally anything, or I've been going for loads of walks in the woods or something, anything, it doesn't matter what it is, I will try and kind of gain inspiration from that. So I'll go like, well, what would a song sound like if it was this character or that character, or like, what would I write if I was walking in this woods, or just things like that, to try and come at it from a different angle. And obviously that's quite a deliberate way of doing it, but the other thing related to that that happens to me is that will just come out anyway. So classic example of that is I did like a three song EP totally out of the blue in one day, where I wrote three songs all related to All Quiet on the Western Front. And because I'd watched the film like a few days prior and I really liked the film, it really got into me. And although I didn't set out to make that music, it was just like, it was just coming out of me. So I just went with it. And it wasn't deliberately like, how can I make it sound like this film? It just came out that way. And I was like, okay, I get the message. It's definitely as a tribute to this or whatever. Yeah, so I just kind of went with it.
Your brain was engaged on that. Yeah, I love the idea of like going out, recording something like a video, or like getting an old clip. Like, it's Philip Conrad does this, where he does live streams of writing music to old-fashioned film, or like old clips of things. He'd be like, right, this has got a vibe. Let's enhance that vibe with some music. And like, it draws inspiration from the things you're seeing. And I love that. I'm yet to try that properly. I really want to give it a go, though, where you're just like, right, headphones on. I've got a whole afternoon. I'm just going to be lost in like soundscape and synthwave, and then like bass lines. And yeah, like, so fun. I think that sounds great.
You definitely should. I found actually, not that I've done it quite to that extent where I've done it to a film, but even the stuff I have done, it's quite therapeutic, because you kind of end up getting lost in it. And as someone who struggles with anxiety, and a lot of people really seem to, so I think it's worth mentioning that doing stuff like that, it can be really therapeutic. And for me, I find it extremely hard to distract myself if I'm really in the grips of being anxious. And so it's quite impressive that it's able to do that. So yeah, definitely give it a go. But
it's amazing advice. Yeah, for anyone at home, I definitely recommend giving that a go. We're going to give something a go with you now, Cece, because we've come towards the end. And I didn't tell you this, but with guests now, at the end of the podcast, we like to put them in the hot seat and give them some quick fire questions. Okay, these are one word answers. These are yes or no's. They are, you know, don't explain yourself. We just want to hear the answer.
Yeah,
that's it. Okay, and some are controversial, some are not. So we'll let you decide which ones those are.
okay.
Chris, do you have the list of questions with you there?
I certainly do.
Fantastic. I'm going to kick things off. Are you ready? Cece.
Well, do.
Pick or fingers?
Fingers.
Very well. Active or passive?
Active.
That's quite a delay on that one. That took some thought.
Very interesting.
Rounds or flats?
rounds?
Four string or five?
Four.
The correct answer.
This is it.
In-ear monitors or wedges?
Wedges.
That's a correct answer.
Interesting one for you. P or J?
P.
P.
Much quicker answer. What would be your desert island base?
The Warwick Corvette.
Very well. Give us an unpopular base opinion.
Jazz basses aren't comfortable to play.
There we go.
There we go. What do you think is the best effect for bass?
Golden plexi.
Woo.
Whoa, whoa, nice.
And finally, final one. This would be an interesting one.
Yeah.
What Star Wars character would be the best at bass?
It would help if I knew more about Star Wars.
I was going to say, you strike me as a Lord of the Rings chap over Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm a Harry Potter all the way for me.
Oh, well, we'll
end
get
the
on.
Call.
Yeah, I'm
end
one of those.
Call. End the call. It's for kids. Grow up.
I guess so, I've heard.
Wow.
You know what? Do you want to tweak it this time and be like, what Harry Potter character?
100%.
Go on.
Because I'm sure I can think of an answer if you give me a minute. But you go on, Cece. Yeah. Who do you think will be like the best bass player? Right, I've got it. I've done it. I've figured it out.
You got it before I have.
Yep. The powers of ADHD.
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to go out on a weird one here, but I'm going to say Voldemort.
Ooh, elaborate. Go on.
Okay. One, he's got really long, weird fingers, so I just feel like he's built for playing bass.
Hold and the neck two, like this.
Yeah. But I was literally just thinking about that. But yeah, also, because he's split his soul so many times, I feel like he might have lots of different places to draw from, maybe. Not sure how it would work with music, but
each one is good at a different genre, you know?
Yeah.
One of them's
one's like an absolute slap bass machine. Yeah. And then the other
come
like,
to slap.
One's like freeform jazz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic.
Brilliant. Johnny, do you have
so
do
what
you
about
have one?
You?
Do you have one?
I was thinking hard. I think Snape was the one for me that came out first of all.
Geez, Slytherin House, blimey. Okay.
Yeah, hiding out in the back, and then he's just like, turn to page 43. You know, like
turn
on the tab book or something like that. You know,
turn on the big muff.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I could just see him doing that and just holding it down at the back, which judging everyone, you know.
Oh,
but he's got an ulterior motive,
point.
You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's all good.
He's my mum's favourite.
Oh, there we go.
It's fair.
Go on then, Chris. What were you thinking?
Neville Longbottom.
The long bottom end, you know?
That. But also, because he had like a pretty mad glow up at like towards post-Harry Potter, basically, I think because he was... Sounds really, really rude. I was going to call him ugly then. Basically, he had a lot more free time to practice. So then when he had his glow up, he was like mint at bass, whereas like guitarists just like get attention straight away so they don't spend as much time practicing. You've really got to horn in to get attention as a bass player. You've got to really, really work on it. So for that, I think Neville would have been the best one.
Wasn't there that whole thing where like he was maybe the one who lived like and was the special one as well? Like there was that whole theory.
I did see that big fan theory, yeah.
Yeah, so... I think maybe that's, you know, that's such a bass player thing as well. Like, oh, could they be the one? Oh, they're quite mysterious and in the background and people don't really think about them. And then, no.
You know I'm going to have to go and look this up now.
Oh, evening sorted.
You go do that. I will not be.
What we need to do, Chris, at the head of every episode with a guest, we'd be like, right, what is your, like your favorite.
Oh yeah,
like,
pop just out of curiosity,
thing.
Are you a Star Wars guy? Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter. It's got to be those three. Like, I don't think we can go. You know, I feel like those are probably the big three to cover. Because if someone says Game of Thrones, it's like, no, we got that covered with Lord of the Rings. Like, I'm not doing Back to the Future because, yeah, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, or Star Wars. We'll ask like leading up to the episode for no reason.
Yeah,
and then we'll hit them with the question at the end.
Yeah,
we'll do that.
Oh my God, I've just
go on.
I've just Google image searched Harry Potter base to see what might come up.
And show you screen.
God.
Oh, there's some scary things on here.
Rule 34.
What is this?
Oh. I want it.
Wow.
You know,
Johnny, is that you?
You know how I said I didn't like jazz basses?
I do now.
I take it back.
The magical jazz.
That's the one.
Wow.
It's the one I've been waiting
my
for.
God, oh, it's like the God. Pickup is his mouth.
Why is he upside down?
I love it.
I'm getting that really weird thing because I know his head's upside down, but my brain's registering it as the
yeah.
other way.
So, yeah.
It's just like it's a really like weird thing. Like...
Wow.
That's horrible.
That rounds things off perfectly, I think. Cece, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. It's been amazing to have you back on. It's gone so fast, it feels like. So
I know.
Fast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Of course, it's been a long time coming. We've been wanting to get you back on as soon as. And thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Tell the people, where can they find you on the internet? What have you got going on at the minute? What should people do?
Mm-hmm. So, on Facebook, I have a page called CC Base, CICIBASS. Then on Instagram, the same thing will come up if you type in CC Base, but my actual handle on there is Worcesterfarian, like the town. No prizes for guessing what my nearest city is. And then on YouTube, I am CC Base as well. That's probably the best place to follow me if you want, like, actual information about things. And then I've got two bands. So one is Red Giant and the other is Von Strangelove, which is still in the process of being set up, but that is a prog metal band and has some really, really exciting stuff coming up.
Exciting. Amazing. Cool. We'll pop links down in the description if you want to go and check out CC's various socials, etc. and more. If you guys love social media and things like that, you should definitely go and check us out, like I said, on Instagram, on YouTube. Follow, subscribe, like all the content, engage. If you want to see more of it, engage with it. You know, that's how you tell the pesky social media robots. That's what we want to see. Speaking of pesky robots, there's something called algorithms. And in order for us to reach up those algorithms, you need to go and rate this podcast 5 stars on your platform of choice, whether that be Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating. It really, really helps out with the show. Chris, where can people find yourself on the internet?
Nice and easy. You can find me literally everywhere under that guy on base. But maybe don't follow me at the moment because I'm really into memes at the moment. Like, I'm really enjoying posting memes. And I don't think everyone likes that. I do play bass. I post videos of me playing bass. But at the moment, I don't know what it is. Just love a good meme. Usually at the expense of a bass player. But, like, I don't know if you saw, but, like, things got a little bit heated, by the way, on one of my posts.
Really?
I had to delete some comments. It's like, ooh.
Oh,
so
gosh.
I did a meme which was, like, when you make a mistake on stage but you're the bass player. Mm. And it's Negan from The Walking Dead being like, ah, yeah, okay. Because it's like no one can hear you, so it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And someone commented on my post saying, oh, try doing that on a Maiden gig. And it's probably worth noting, the person who commented wasn't Steve Harris. So it was not someone in Iron Maiden. So I decided to make my opinions very, very well known that I am not a fan of Iron Maiden. And I specifically, in this guy's comment, referred to them as the poor man's Metallica. And
let's just say, if you go on that post and look at the comments, that's what I chose to keep in the post. There were a lot of people not particularly happy with the fact I'd said that.
Wow. So like, from very rude. From everyone else's perspective now, it just looks like you absolutely owned them and no one replied. And they're like,
yeah. Oh, no, there's loads of replies. There's loads of replies, people saying slur words for certain mental disabilities that I will not be repeating out loud on air. Just some overall not good stuff. And then someone said, if you like Metallica, then you like pop music. I liked that comment. Right. Oh, okay, fair enough.
What?
Cool. Metallica aren't a pop band. They're a metal band, but at the same time, what's wrong with pop music, you strange, bearded individual? But yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. Yeah. But I'm keeping it up. I'm not... That's the second time post on social media has got me in trouble. But...
And it won't be the last, damn it.
No, it won't be. Won't be. But I'm enjoying some memes at the moment. I will probably post a reel of me playing bass soon when I can be bothered. But for now, love a good meme. Johnny.
Fantastic.
Someone who actually posts videos of them playing bass on the internet.
Yes.
And memes.
You can find me everywhere on Instagram, just Johnny Dibble. Same on YouTube. If you just search my name, I hope it should come up. So give that a go. Just give that a go. Just a Johnny Dibble. That is me. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for watching. See you next time.
Ta-ta.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.